Today's show, Notre Dame's big night, 31 years in the making. What's up with all these Northern teams? It's the Wild West. Preview the upcoming semifinals, and we got a goat poisoning down in Texas.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
We're 2 days into the year. I don't know what's. I'm scared.
Russ Dellinger.
Someone who said he entered the transfer portal in the third quarter.
And SI's Pat Forty.
It's a war of northern aggression, Dan.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. It's on November 13th, 1993. Notre Dame defeated Florida State 31-24. It was deemed one of the game of the centuries. It was always fun. Florida State was number one. Notre Dame was number two. Notre Dame, coached by Lou Holtz, defeated the Seminoles, coached by Bobby Bowden. They looked en route to the national title, but then Boston College ruined it all the next week. But that happens. But this was back when Notre Dame was Notre Dame. And they mattered. They counted. They were big time. And then, 31 years happened. And Notre Dame was no longer Notre Dame. They could get pretty good, but they could never really do anything against somebody who was great. And along came January 2nd, 2025. Notre Dame 23, Georgia Bulldogs 10. At the Sugar Bowl, biggest victory for the Fighting Irish in 31 years, three decades plus. Pushes Notre Dame into the semifinal. They will play Penn State. The other side of the bracket, of course, is Ohio State and Texas. That means we have two Big Ten teams, a Northern Independent, and last year's Big 12 champion. Yes. Anyone notice what's missing?
Huh, what could that be?
Oh, do we have topics today? do we have topics?
We do.
But let's start with this. Ross, you were there. Notre Dame, give them their day. Give them their due. 31 years, they've been waiting. What happened?
Yeah, it was a kind of was it an incredible show of just all around production from the team in every facet. They kind of beat Georgia in the way that I feel like Georgia teams have beaten others in the past. They played extraordinarily well on defense. They made huge plays on special teams. And they were able to run the ball in really key moments, especially at the quarterback position, in really key moments in big runs and big plays. And it was I think, what a lot of people expected it to be, right? It was this kind of knuckle fight of a game. And that was probably going to be decided, you know, by a crazy play or two that, and that's what we got, right? We got a 98-yard touchdown return on a kickoff, and we got a couple of recovered fumbles. One turned into a touchdown for Notre Dame, and that was kind of the difference in the game. And then at the very end, we got kind of a little trickeration with Marcus Freeman and the special teams coordinator at Notre Dame, Marty Biagi, doing a little bit of a trickeration on a punt to get Georgia to jump off sides in a drive that ended up really winning the game. It extended the drive, gave Notre Dame a first down when they jumped off sides, and it gave Notre Dame time to run the clock off and run five more minutes off. So afterward, it was
Notre Dame receiver even, flinched. He flinched.
What?
He flinched. The Notre Dame receiver. He flinched.
Oh. All right.
But that's where? Which play?
On the fake punt.
The
it was genius.
Punt play.
The punt play was great, but yeah, he did flinch.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
It was unbelievable.
Okay.
A fake punt designed to draw an offside, right, is just like incredible.
Well,
I just wanted to say it so I don't have to listen to everybody screaming at us on the YouTube comments.
For the record.
He flinched. We'll get to it. Good. He flinched. Whatever. Good. Go ahead.
Afterward, you know, for a week of like where obviously in New Orleans, like we discussed in the last pod, the kind of the tragedy that happened here and all that stuff, like you could kind of feel in the stadium. It was an eerie kind of feeling. And more attended than I expected. I kind of expected like 2/3 full. It was probably at least that, if not more like 75-80%. It was pretty impressive. I think they announced around mid-50s in attendance, and tickets, more like 68,000 tickets were sold. So you had roughly like 15,000, 18,000 empty seats, but they were loud and it was a good environment, much better than I thought. And then afterward, again, after this long week here, you know, and this tragedy and all this stuff that happened, you kind of feel like the emotion of Notre Dame to win this huge game, despite all the years, all the failures, as Dan mentioned, 31 years, 10 major bowls during that stretch. They lost 10 major bowls in a row. You felt it just all come out in that stadium, in the dome, and confetti falling and tears flowing from a lot of people. It was a cool scene.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Shake down the thunder. Notre Dame, they got it done. They did it. They not just won the game. They were largely in control. But the main thing that they did and that they have done that I've seen from them is have home run plays, huge back-breaking plays, and they've done it time and time and time again. The 100-yard kickoff return, it was 98-yard kickoff return to open the second half. That really came close to ending the game. That made it 20-3, and I just never thought Georgia was going to get to 20 points with Gunnar Stockton, and they didn't. They made it to 10. Last game in the first round of the playoff, 98-yard run by Jeremiah Love for a touchdown. Last game of the regular season against USC, 99-yard pick six and 100-yard pick six. That's four touchdowns of 98 yards or longer in three games. Before that, they had five others in the other three games. They had nine touchdowns in the last seven games of 64 yards or longer. And what have we said for years about Notre Dame? They don't have home run hitters. They don't have the speed. They don't have, you know, the separators. Well, they're finding them, and they're in on all three phases. Defensive scores, kickoff return, running plays by Jadarian Price or by Jeremiah Love. Maybe occasionally they throw the ball down the field, although that's really not a big part of their game. Riley Leonard threw for 90 yards in this game, you know, but it didn't matter. They've just figured out how to win, this team has, and it's really, I can't be more impressed with Marcus Freeman. Incredible. You know, I mean, the amount of attention. We were all pretty close to firing him after the Northern Illinois game, right? You know, I mean, it was like, this guy can't keep losing these games. You can't have these games. Well, they stopped having those games. And now they're having big wins. As Dan laid out, this is the biggest win in 31 years. And to beat Georgia without Carson Beck, I thought it would happen. I thought they would beat Georgia, but it had been a long, long time since they have beaten a heavyweight SEC team in the South, in this case. And, you know, I covered two games between Notre Dame and Georgia in 2017 and 18. Georgia won them both, and it just seemed like there was a difference between the programs. As of today, there's not. Notre Dame has arrived. Now, getting to a Final Four, they did that before with Brian Kelly. Now it's time to do a little bit more, and I think they can.
You got to throw a little bit on there. Always got to throw a little bit on there. Always got to. Now, look,
ask this for a little more.
If you know a Notre Dame fan, let them have their moment. Let them have their moment. We tease the Notre Dame fans. Notre Dame grads, right? How do you know a guy went to Notre Dame? Wait 2 minutes, he'll tell you. But they are a loyal bunch. And they are a faithful bunch. And they have gone through a lot of years where they know everybody hates them. Everyone tells you, you got to join a conference, man.
Purdue's got more, making more TV money than you, man. Why don't you join a Notre Dame will never be relevant. Notre Dame will never be good.
They used to say that when they weren't it.
You got to join a conference.
Then now we're going to do our thing. We're going to do our thing. They get their hopes up. Get their hopes up. They get like good four-star guy. They'll be like some good athlete from Fort Wayne. They'll think, oh, we got it. Toledo Catholic got us a guy. They got 70 linemen and no running backs. Tight ends. We got tight ends. Freaking lake effect. This is it. And they get, but everyone bags on them. And then they finally get a little hope. And then they get in the big game and they get absolutely curb stomped. But then they're back the next year, man. They are loyal. And This is their let them have their moment. These are people that sat there for three decades. And yeah, okay, it's not the losingest program. Obviously, they have fans. But but look at all the tradition we got over here. Tradition. You know what they did? They dialed up the tradition. They ran an offense that Newt Rockne would have loved. 90 yards passing, perfect. Drop back to pass. So two out of three things can happen and two of them are bad, right? This is it. They got Rudy. They got movies. They got everything. They never had any wins. Now they got wins and they would blow games. My God. They'd either get curb stomped or they'd be like, hey, let's have a goal line stand against Ohio State, but let's try it with only 10 dudes. Leave room for the Holy Ghost. Holy Ghost can't tackle no one. Not a Buckeye, at least. So they had, this is it. I'm happy for them. And I think, as you said, Pat, they won the way Georgia would beat them.
Yeah.
It's 3-3. All right. We're in the game. And all of a sudden, field goal, strip sack, touchdown, 98. Oh, we're done.
Yeah.
That is how Notre Dame has lost every game.
Yeah.
Athletes, they've got athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Player, they got talent. Riley Leonard, man, all he does is run and praise Jesus. I don't know how he didn't go to Notre Dame originally.
Yeah, right. He's straight out of Central Casting.
And I think that the worm is turned on this. People were rooting for Notre Dame because they hate the SEC more. And Brian Kelly leaving and being just Brian Kelly, and then, you know, we got this cool 38-year-old Marcus Freeman guy. Like, how do you not like this dude?
Yeah.
Notre Dame is likable. The world has gone nuts. We're 2 days into the seat to the year. I don't know. I'm scared. It was like death by paper cut for Georgia. It's just like, oh, third and six. And then Riley Leonard sneaks. Got 6.5. Could not get him off the field. Georgia could not do what they normally do. This was just beautiful. And I'm going to give a note to this. We'll probably up too early on this, but this is why Notre Dame, this is a new era in this sport. Notre Dame and the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
Riley Leonard, quarterback. Yep. Jaden Harrison, the guy with the kick return. Marshall.
Yep.
Leonard's from Duke. Touchdown catch by Bo Collins. He's from Clemson.
Yep.
RJ Oben with the strip sack. He's from Duke. Yep. Rod Hurd with a huge pass breakup in the second half. He's from Northwestern. Jordan Clark, the safety, is laying wood all over the place, crushing people. ASU, Arizona State. The three field goals, Mitch Jeter. He's from South Carolina. That's what the portal does. Notre Dame is not going to, like, win all the portal battles, but they found this guy and they needed this guy and they needed this spot and they filled that. And that's why the portal has changed college football and NIL. This team, where is Notre Dame if they only had one of those, let's say two of those guys? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they have
it's
all
not
these
just Leonard. Years. It's the little pick. It's the little spots in there. Jordan Clark's a nice player. Hurd was a nice player. Go ahead, Ross.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I mean, I was going to say they're, transfer portal plucking is different too, right? Than many
mostly
teams.
Mostly grad transfers.
Right. Almost all grad transfers. I think it's two. The number is two undergrad transfers they've had in three under Freeman in 3 years, I believe. That's what they told me, I've looked back and I can't find anymore. So 2 and 3 years. So yeah, almost all of them are grad transfers, you know, because of the academic standards there. But I think, Dan, and I wrote a little bit about this in that story about the streak, the major bowl streak earlier this week. I would guess that there's going to be a little more, I don't want to say relaxing on standards, but there is an understanding, I think, in the school that football is very important and is probably more important than ever, especially for the lone independent, basically, in college football. And so I think there's more of an understanding. I have a feeling you will see more undergraduate transfers probably at Notre Dame in the near future.
Stick a guy in there. Well, and you get the spoils.
And the funny thing there, one of the very few guests we have had on this podcast was Jack Swarbrick back like 4 years ago or something.
It was about how this was
to
horrible.
Talk about the letter that he and Father Jenkins wrote to the New York Times, basically saying the professionalization of sports has gotten too much, and if it's going to go this way, Notre Dame ain't going to be part of it.
Well,
Notre Dame's part of
it. Who challenged him on that? Who told him it was good for him?
That was you.
That was me. Jack's a nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't go too hard on him, but this worked out perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Worked out
Notre
perfect.
Notre Dame's a modern program in every way right now.
Yeah. Has anyone, though, had a – you talked a little about Freeman. You know, after the NIU loss, it was like, what the heck, man? Again?
Yeah.
No one's had a glow up like this guy. I mean, that was a exceptionally well-coached team.
Yes.
And, again, the special teams, and then the fake punt was just genius. And they were on it, man.
You really can see that his coaching, you just from 3 years ago and even from last year, you can see the things that he's getting better at, right? You can see the experience and the decision-making and the preparation of the team. You know, he was young, and he's still young, right? He's 38, 39? Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, so imagine 36 years old as a coach that you're going to grow. And we are kind of – I feel like we are seeing that in front of our eyes, him grow. I mean, think about it. You know, he got this team – you know, they lose at – they lose against Northern Illinois. Riley Leonard has a pretty terrible game, right? He's like – getting threats and things like that on social media and all that stuff. And Freeman and him meet Sunday after that Northern Illinois game. And Riley's going to that meeting. He told me, and he thought he was basically going to be fired as the starting quarterback at Notre Dame, and thought he would never touch a ball again. And Freeman, he walked in the meeting, and Freeman dapped him up, as he said, and asked about how his family is, and they sat down and they just talked, and it, like it never happened the day before. So from that point forward, you know, look at the job that Freeman has done, and how he interacts with players and how much the players love him, steering this team from losing to Northern Illinois to where they are now, 12 wins in a row and headed to the semifinal. It's been pretty remarkable. And then what he did here, a little nugget that he told the media in the press conference, you know, he had all this tragedy that happened here in New Orleans and all this stuff. Well, he kind of did a somewhat unusual thing yesterday, a day before a big game, playoff game. He allowed players to spend 3 hours free with their family in the city. He said that in times of tragedy, you know, he wanted his players to have some comfort and parents to have comfort in their kids. And he's just kind of pushed the right buttons, you know, and one of the buttons was certainly that the fake punt situation, right? He brought whatever you want to call it. He brought on all, I think it was, the situation was 7 minutes left in the game, Notre Dame up 13 at their own 18-yard line, and he brings the punt team on. They line up, and then with about, 10, 12 seconds left in the play clock, in a mad dash, they all run off the field, and the offense runs on, and Georgia's allowed to substitute, so they run on their defense and then, you know, get caught in the neutral zone on a hard count because of everything was so frantic. And then first down, and the game's basically over at that point. Had Notre Dame got another first down, and they got a couple more to put the game away. So it was pretty big moment there. And again, you do see his coaching development kind of in front of your own eyes.
Yeah, I remember Swarbrick told me, I think after he promoted him, he said his EQ is off the charts, his emotional IQ. I think he reads people and situations and knows how to handle people. As for that fake punt, or the non-fake punt, the hard count, the take the punt team out and then bring on the offense, that, while it was a great play by Notre Dame, really smart, and it worked perfectly, but I think it also illustrated one of the problems with this Georgia team all year. Focus, they just will be casual. They drop a million passes. They get bad penalties. They fall asleep at certain times, you know, and that's a deviation from the usual Kirby Smart way, and that's something I think they kind of need to dig in on in the offseason and say, you know what, we weren't really like Georgia in some really key ways this year, and they're going to have to get better at that.
I agree. We've been waiting all year and saying, okay, is Georgia now serious? And, you know, they do it for a little while in a game. I mean, look, they still won the SEC championship. They lost their starting quarterback. But I get the sense that a lot of people around Georgia are like, we weren't winning this thing. That, you know, they know what a great team looks like 2021 and 2022. And maybe even last year to a degree. This wasn't it. And you know, why that is, I think there's the lack of depth, but yes, that casualness. And I would expect there to be a massive addressing of that by Kirby Smart, who I think will take this loss terribly. That would be my expectation. I wouldn't want to be at whatever they're allowed to practice again or whatever. You know who I really don't want to be is Parker Jones. Did you just have to transfer Parker Jones or sophomore walk-on quarterback who wasn't even in uniform, although he's wearing his jersey? Second quarter, Gunnar Stockton hits Arian Smith for like a 66-yard pass, and as the ref is, everyone's running down the field, Parker Jones, the not in uniform, not playing, walk-on quarterback, crashes into the ref because he's too excited and he's out in the little white stripe, and they get a 15-yard penalty, and they get moved back to they get tackled at the 11. They get moved back to the 26. Now, Georgia's offense went nowhere, so they had to kick a field goal, and they maybe would have had to do that at the 11. But regardless, so many people were fired up about who the heck this guy was, who wasn't in the game but got called for a penalty. I mean, talk about lack of focus.
Yes, exactly.
You're not even in the game. You don't really play here.
Yeah.
You're kind of on the team.
Somebody was saying he entered the transfer portal in the third quarter.
Transfer to anything. It's like that in the movie Friday. How do you get fired on your day off? 15-yard penalty when you're not playing in the game. You're not on the active roster.
Yes, it's like Kramer when he doesn't. He's not hired at the job. I forgot where he's working, but he really isn't a full time employee. And the guy's like, "We have to let you go." And Kramer's like, "Well, I don't even work here." You know, and the guy says, the guy famously says, "That's what makes this so difficult." You know,
good stuff. Like, okay,
did you see Dan that Parker Jones? His bio on the Georgia site, the link to his bio, so many people were going to it. It crashed.
Everyone was like, who the heck is this guy?
You can't make it up.
Oh, Lord.
It's Parker Jones. Yeah. I mean, how do you even go in the locker room after the game? I don't even know if I'd go back on the team plane. I'd just be like, Greyhound.
Right? Yeah, no, I buy my separate ticket. And you know what? This was Southwest Airlines want to get away commercial, and that's what I would do. I would get away to Southwest Airlines.
That's perfect.
I would not go with the team on Delta. Uh-uh.
Snickers commercial, right? You need an escape. Yeah. What's Snickers? Whatever Snickers is slogan is. Yeah.
Poor Parker. Even if you're back, okay, you're like, okay, I just stay away from the team. I'll go back to my apartment or whatever. Like, what are you going to go out tonight? Like tomorrow night at campus?
No.
Everyone's like, you're Parker Jones.
I mean, you got to go Connor Stallions disguise to ever go out again.
Or at least for the next like
6 months. Yeah, bro.
Bro-hio. Connor Stallions disguise was just Central Michigan coach who looked like Connor Stallions.
Yeah.
Bro-hio from the side sealer. Yeah. Call Bro-hio. Maybe you can help him out. I think you just automatically transfer. I think you just got maybe Notre Dame will take you because you helped them out.
Maybe
he was like a infiltration. That was one of the funniest things, not for Parker, but for the rest of us.
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Poor Parker.
poor Parker. Yeah.
It's like, my son, he's trying to walk on the team. It's pretty good. He gets to go on the trip. Oh, it's cool. Yeah. He's never plays, but that's all right. I mean, hell yeah, Georgia Bulldogs.
Could you imagine his parents? Poor parents.
What's the worst thing that could happen?
No.
What's the worst thing that could happen?
They're at some function, in Georgia. Are you Parker's parents? The kid ran out into the ref and cost us a touchdown? And
He got tackled. It didn't turn out that, but at least their name's Jones, right? At least it's not like a unique name.
You Mr. know, he Jones, can kind of. Yeah, he's got some disappearing capability with that.
I don't have any Parker. I have a Peter. No, I don't. I have a Peter Jones. What? Just change your name. Just got to get the hell out of there. I'm sorry. Yeah. Sorry that happened to you, but you're not going to be a Georgia Bulldog anymore. I can't. Easy scapegoat. We're here to mock him. We love you, Parker. Small sample Heisman. He should put a GoFundMe up and have the Notre Dame. The Notre Dame fans right now are so happy and drunk.
Oh, they'll send you money. Yeah. Absolutely.
They'll send you money. They'll send everyone money. They're gonna.
Whoever jumped offside on the fake deal,
they'll double gold that dome. Let's make it even more gold. All right, we're gonna be back after this to talk about what's this conference again? What's this little old conference down south?
Oh yeah, that
good thing they expanded.
The one where it used to mean more.
Yeah. They got off-brand Texas. They had expansion team
off-brand.
They had to go get an off-brand SEC. Oh boy, this is like Texas A&M. This hurts them so much. It's like no, SEC still in this thing. Oh no, it's them. All right, we'll be back after this. So, look, for a long time, the SEC dominated this sport. I don't think there's any question. Would they win 9 straight titles? 8?
8. I think it was 8 straight in 13 of 14.
And then maybe it was
something like that.
The one that broke it, other than one Ohio State, it's like, it's Clemson.
Two Clemson.
You're right.
Two Clemson, one Ohio
for State. For most of the country, Michigan. It's like, so just because they're not in the SEC, it's like the school in South Carolina wins it? Okay. There was the one Urban Meyer team, and that's been it for a long time. But the sport is different now. First off, we have a playoff of 12 teams. If we went with the BCS formula, it would have been Oregon versus Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
How's that turning out for you? Yeah.
Not too good.
Yeah, not very good. 4 team, whatever. They did expand and add Texas, so they do have an SEC team in this thing, but it is different. We have Ohio State, we have Penn State, we have Notre Dame, and I think this is reality now. I've said it many, many times on this podcast for many, many years, but you talk to economists and the way that you change talent dispersion is through salary. If you're, how do you attract great talent? You pay a little extra if you live in an area that's less desirable. It's easier to get someone to move to Miami than Midland, Michigan, something like that. So you got to pay more. Or you got to find a way, and now you can pay. and now you can transfer. And you take these guys like transfer market is much easier. And again, these Notre Dame kids were grad transfers, but yeah, they don't mind that, oh, the campus isn't that popping socially or whatever. Maybe they're like, hey, I can get like a Notre Dame like accounting degree, something like that. Why'd they go there? Who cares? They went to Notre Dame, Penn State, Ohio State, these schools. It is a very statistically more probable than not that this is the second straight year the national champion will come from the North. Michigan won it last year. They played Washington in that title game. It is a totally different deal. And I don't know that that's going to change, Pat.
It's a war of Northern aggression, Dan. Here they come. Coming south, coming to get the players, coming to get the trophies. Going to go to Atlanta, and we'll see if Texas, of all people, is there to defend SEC pride. Texas, which, you know, part of the whole SEC argument has always been that, you know, the crucible of the league is what makes them so good, right? Texas was this good last year. Texas was a Final Four team as a Big 12 team last year. Being in the SEC didn't make Texas a playoff semifinalist. Being Texas made Texas an SEC semifinalist. And you look around, let's look, Ohio State, best player that we've seen maybe so far in the playoff, Jeremiah Smith, he's from Miami. Went down and got him. Riley Leonard's from Fairhope, Alabama. Quite sure that Alabama didn't want him, but he's playing and Alabama is not. Bo Collins was at Clemson and was their best receiver at Clemson. Clemson's been hurting for receivers. He's still playing. Clemson isn't. That's not the SEC, but that's the South. I mean, it's pretty interesting. It really is. And, you know, this year of all years, given the amount of posturing of basically the SEC and or Big Ten threatening to just kind of go take their ball and do what they want with it, like, well, not really backing it up on the field. They have in the past, absolutely, without question. The SEC has been the best conference. But right here, right now, after watching Georgia lose by 13 points, after watching Tennessee get absolutely dump trucked, after watching Texas barely get by Arizona State, and watching Alabama flop and South Carolina lose, Texas A&M lose, it hadn't been a great run since the playoff pairings came out, and all we heard from some corners was that the SEC was going to stomp everybody and show that they should have had more teams in the playoff. It hasn't worked out that way. So we'll see how far the war of Northern aggression goes, but it's an interesting little plot line.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I had a commissioner this morning call me and say, Ross, the gap isn't as big as everybody says it is, or as they say it is, they being the SEC and probably to a degree the Big Ten too. It's not as big and the game's played out that way, he said. And I think, you know, I think there's a point to that. I think we've seen some of that. And we've talked all season about how all of college football has more parity and more equitable because of specifically the transfer movement and the transfer portal spreading out the talent like it has. And I think that's partly what we're seeing here. You know, when you look at and Dan brought up a good point with, you know, you level the playing field in a way with salaries. And you look at, I think it was 2/3 of the 4 and 5 stars for a 10-year span. So I think this was 2010 to 2019. 2/3 of the 4 and 5 star recruits were from the 11 state footprint of the SEC. So of course, naturally, a lot of them are going to stay home, right? And we saw 16 up until last year, 16 of the previous 17 national champions in college football came from a tiny little circle of the Deep South, except for the one Ohio State win. And now we're definitely going to have more. We're definitely going to have a second straight year of a team from outside of that deep South circle win the national championship. Even if Texas does win, they are outside of that circle. And I think that is attributed to not just NIL, but the transfer movement, spreading out the talent. And I think it's, you know, I think it's probably good for all of college football. Probably not good for the SEC, but I think it is good for all of college football. And that should be, in the end, good for the SEC, you would think, if we can have, as Greg Sankey has said it many times, a national championship from coast to coast. We need, this is a national organization. When he's asked over and over about the NCAA and separating from the NCAA and breaking off, he always goes to the same comment, which is, this is a national association. We want to compete nationally. We want a national championship. And I think as we move forward, we have more of that than ever.
So the last time we had two straight years without an SEC/Deep South team in the championship game was 2004-05. It's been 20 years. So,
I've given these stats out before, but when you had to sign 4 or 5 straight years of top 5 recruiting classes, proximity to talent is always the thing. And I mean, there were years, Alabama signed 14 of the top 100 players and Georgia signed 11. It was like a quarter of the top 100 recruits in the country went to two teams. And you stack them up. There was that game that the Alabama-Notre Dame played. Alabama had 22 5-stars and Notre Dame had 2. And there was no way to get around it. And Ohio State under Urban Meyer was the only program that figured out a way to possibly recruit at that level. And even then, he could only get one. And that's why when everyone was screaming about the Wild West and this isn't any good and Notre Dame's sitting there saying we're going to drop out, it's like, no, this is going to be good for you. And it's not just that, you know, Alabama signed 8 top 100s this year. Great recruiting class by Kalen DeBoer. But that's 6 more guys that went somewhere else. And you stack that out over 4 years, the depth isn't there. The quarterback play in the SEC this year wasn't very good. And quarterbacks are going to go find a place to play. They aren't sitting. You sit for a year, everyone's amazed Arch Manning sat for 2. Everyone else is going somewhere. You can't hold on to these quarterbacks. You just bring in another guy. And it's just a totally different ball game. And that's why all of this is great for Penn State. It's great for Notre Dame. It's great for Ohio State to a degree. Ohio State was going to be fine anyway. But the Wild West is hurting the South. And I don't know why anybody anymore would look at all the stuff that they've been complaining about and say this is a bad thing. If you're, unless you're the, I can see the SEC going, hey, we want the old way back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like the Wild West. I liked it better when we kept all the kids. We're not getting that. And one of the more funny things happened in this playoff is they were doing a college game day at Indiana, Notre Dame, Indiana game, right? And the comedian Shane Gillis was on the game day set. And he had joked earlier that look what happens when everybody can pay their players, right? Not just the SEC. And they put him on there with Saban. And Pat McAfee, who likes to stir it up, of course, says to Gillis, who is he's a comedian, a huge Notre Dame fan. He says, well, you were picking on Coach Saban earlier. And he said, all he said was, well, I know the SEC never paid for any players. And Saban immediately launched into this. He didn't take the joke too well. He immediately launched into, well, we ran our program with integrity. And the way we cheated was getting $1 billion in player, in NFL salaries, all this stuff. Okay, fine. But, man, that joke was, you know, that thing's hitting hard right now.
Yeah.
It's hitting hard.
It is. I mean, And that's it. Like, I mean, there's really not a lot for the SEC, the traditional old guard SEC, to do, but sit there and take it, because there's going to be a lot of sack dancing going on. And if the Big Ten wins back-to-back titles, well, baby, and it'd be, it's kind of hard for Michigan and Ohio State to link arms and say, yeah, look at us. But they might, if it's a chance to do it and, you know, show something to the SEC.
They chant SEC, SEC in the South, but I don't know if Michigan can quite, and Ohio State can quite do that.
No.
But I think the SEC will be fine. They've got great programs and tradition and all this stuff, but you're just not going to dominate the way you did. It's a different era, and it's not changing. Ross, you know, we've heard all this with, like, the SEC basically threatening, or, you know, kind of implying we're just going to expand, or whatever they want is what's going to happen. You said you talked to a commissioner today. Like, are people going to listen to him when you're not even in the final? I guess you got Texas, but when you're not putting out you're not showing out in the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, that was certainly a big piece of, I know what we've talked about the last couple of weeks about, you know, Arizona State and Boise and how important the games were, not just for them to win, but for them to be competitive. And they were certainly competitive just because of the arguments that those programs, those conferences could have moving forward in a format debate. And I think they acquitted themselves, as we talked about. They didn't win, but they acquitted themselves. But yeah, I think that when you look at, you know, who has the voice in these rooms, it's the SEC and Big Ten. And, you know, if one of those isn't competing as well as they have been, it is going to be pretty interesting. Now, the issue is the agreement's done, right? Like, the commissioners in the spring gave the power starting in 2026 playoff to the SEC and Big Ten. And that's done. So, but they still have to work out the details on exactly governance, some of that stuff, and the voting on some other things. And
so
all
the
that
SEC
will be
wants
really
this thing to go to 16. They can just do it.
I think if the SEC and Big Ten are in agree, the way I've been led to believe in the spring, what happened is that there was an agreement from the other leagues, of the CFP, the other FBS leagues, to grant authority to the SEC and Big Ten when it comes to the future of the format. Now, they have to work together with TV partner ESPN, and they have to have, there's a concerted effort that has to be made with the other power leagues. But for the most part, the SEC and Big Ten, from what I understand and from what the SEC and Big Ten commissioners have said publicly, they believe they control the format started in 2026 and beyond. They will not need unanimity. So if they together agree on something, there's a good chance that it probably gets done. Now, I think the first thing, as we discussed at length, I think the first thing they look at in the at the championship game site when they meet in January in Atlanta is the seeding for the rank, you know, to seed based on the ranking instead of the championship game by rule that we've discussed for a while. But to do that immediately, to do anything immediately with the format for next year, because there's one more year left under the old deal, they need unanimity. But they do not need unanimity starting in 2026. If the SEC and Big Ten want a format change starting then, if they get the blessing from ESPN, it sounds like they'll be able to do it.
Yeah. I wouldn't bury the SEC here. I'm not burying. Let's be clear.
No,
but it isn't what it was.
That would be ridiculous.
And it's obvious that none of these teams were as good as they normally are. They weren't even close. I was waving the flag for a long time, because you'd go watch the teams and you'd go, forget it. You know, we're kind of the few people that would go cover an SEC game in 1 week and a Big Ten the next. Like, even the coaches would say, oh, our league's unbelievable. Well, you haven't seen any other leagues.
Right.
And you go,
we do.
And you go, I don't know about that, but it just isn't there right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think who in the SEC is really happy with the state of their program right now. South Carolina is, Missouri is. Texas, I'm sure, is, but out of the old guard. Vanderbilt.
Ole Miss. Like,
yeah, Ole Miss. But still, Ole Miss, they blew it. They lost to Kentucky, you know? I mean, there's just that nobody is hitting the right now. I mean, LSU is not. Alabama is not. Georgia is not hitting the way we've seen them hit. Florida is definitely not.
Tennessee. Pretty happy.
Yeah, except for. I mean,
I think everyone was getting, you know, that seeding hurt Tennessee. Tennessee should have been like a 7 seed and playing somebody else.
Yeah.
And then you get, and eventually you're going to run into Ohio State, but I don't know. Anyway, it's a new era, and the North is rising, and they got a lot of money in the North. These schools are big.
Big population.
And the states are big. And they got a lot of corporations and a lot of rich alum. And you're seeing it with Michigan, and you see it with Penn State, like, Notre Dame. Ohio, these are massive. These are bigger than what you got. You're going to have to bring a big old bank account to beat those guys. So if this is how it's going to be, it's just a different thing. You can't just sit there and go, well, nobody lives in State College. There aren't any 5-star recruits around there. Well, that's true. But that isn't how it works anymore. All right, we'll be back. We're going to preview the two semifinal games in a People's Court. All right, let's take a look at these semifinal games. Texas, Ohio State. It's going to be played in Arlington, Texas. Buckeyes, 6-point favorites right now. Pat, how do you see this playing out?
Texas better strap it up. That's how I see it. I mean, Ohio State is just absolutely obliterating good teams. And the amazing thing with the Oregon game was, like, they didn't even need Oregon to turn the ball over or do anything just catastrophically dumb. They just blew past them on offense and smashed them on defense. And if it took going 80 yards, they went 80 yards. And they gave up nothing. So that was not – there was no fluke to that. There was no – created by bizarre fumble interception circumstances, any of that. No, that was just lining up and destroying a team that beat you 2 months earlier. So I could not be more impressed with what Ohio State's doing. And while Texas, I mean, give them credit, they won the game against Arizona State when it looked bleak. They pulled that one out. But they gave up 510 yards and 29 first downs to Arizona State. That was a good defense, and they just got blasted, and the next offense they're going to play is much better. So I think Texas is really up against it. We will see if they can figure some things out or if Ohio State just cools down. Will Howard misses some big throws or something, but I think that one looks very bleak for Texas.
Dan, remember that bad record I had in the picks, the picks.
Yeah, we all remember.
The race for the case. Damn.
Yeah, you were terrible.
I was bad. Yeah, it's bad.
You're on a heater right now, though.
I'm 8-0 in my playoff picks. 8-0. I tweeted that out earlier with my playoff bracket. I got several people commenting, where was this in the race for case?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The race for the case.
Where was it?
I don't know. In the bag.
Notice you didn't tweet those picks out.
No, I didn't tweet those out. I'm keeping those in the bag. I say that to say that my national championship pick before the playoffs started was Ohio State, and yeah. They had the best roster, and Michigan got in their head, so I didn't even count that when I think about it. And they almost beat Oregon and Eugene, played a heck of a game, and I thought that the home field advantage there was kind of the tipping point. And here we are. Unfortunately for them, they have to play Texas in Arlington. Doesn't seem real fair, but then again, I guess Texas was the better seed there. But I think they could play on the moon. I think they could play in Austin, and I think Ohio State would win the game. They are playing, hitting on all the cylinders here, and I think the scariest thing is what Pat just said, right? To Arizona State, you allow 500 yards. I can't imagine what happens when you're going to be faced with that that offensive roster in weapons for the Buckeyes.
I still have some belief in the Texas defensive line, and maybe you can mimic a little bit of what Michigan did there. I think the way to stop Ohio State is to control the ball, and maybe that's it. Texas doesn't score real quick if they can get something going there. But this is what I think of Ohio State right now. Ohio State is 1980s Mike Tyson, and they come out and they have given up on the old philosophies of football, and certainly the one that doomed them against Michigan. Let's prove we can run the ball. Let's do this, that. It'd be like telling Tyson, let's establish the jab.
Yeah.
Let's settle in for a couple of rounds. Mm-hmm. Let's figure out his speed. No, I'm Mike Tyson. I come out and throw an immediate left hook that tries to decapitate the other guy. And in this case, the left hook is Jeremiah Smith. And then it's Emeka Egbuka. That's the right hook. There's no settling in. There's no jab. There's nothing. There's just haymaker after haymaker immediately. Bell rings. I'm coming across like a bull, and I'm going to deck you. Your cornerback is terrified right now because he's standing across from Jeremiah Smith going, how do I cover him? I'm not going to let him settle in. And I think they figured that out. They are a passing team that sets up the run. They are just, let's just get the ball to the good players. No more whatever the fundamentals. Let's try to out-tough Michigan. Don't bother, Michigan ain't here, but don't bother out-toughing anybody. They knocked out Tennessee, and they knocked out Oregon. The game goes on 60 minutes, and both teams had some moments. They kind of, both in the middle of the game, right around the half, both Oregon and Tennessee kind of got to their feet and did a few things, but it was too late, and then they just wore them out. Yeah, you were just done. But the defense is great, but they have figured out this offense is Mike Tyson. Just go. Bell rings, we're attacking, and good luck. Good luck stopping it. I'm not totally out on Texas being able to do something here, but 6 points, boy, I feel pretty good about that one. I'd feel pretty good about that with the Buckeyes. All right, we got Penn State and Notre Dame. This one is Thursday night in Miami at the Orange Bowl. Notre Dame is right now a 1.5-point favorite. They are going to get a shorter week. Nice little bonus for Penn State. 2 extra days of rest. Doesn't hurt, right? Because they played New Year's Eve, and then the Notre Dame game got moved back a day because of the terrorist attack in New Orleans. So a little bit of advantage there for Penn State, but bookmakers have Notre Dame as the favorite. Pat, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, a couple things. I thought this would be the matchup going in, and we got it, and I think it's going to be really good. The big picture storyline here is going to be, and I think it's an interesting and very valid one, we're going to have a black coach play for a national championship. One way or the other. It's either going to be Marcus Freeman or it's going to be James Franklin. And if you think about it, it's stunning and I think a bit embarrassing for the sport of college football that it's 2025 and this is now happening. It's like, where the hell have we been? College basketball, John Thompson won the national championship in 1984. Nolan Richardson won one in 1994. Tubby Smith won one. Kevin Ollie won one. You know, we crossed that bridge a long time ago in basketball. Football, we have not, and it is bizarre to me. I mean, like, there haven't even been that many black. This is the first time actually we've ever had a black coach in the college football playoff is this year. These two guys. And now they're both going to play in the semifinals and one's going to go on. So it's fascinating to me. And I think a great just inflection point and examination of okay, we're here now, but where have we been? As for the game itself, I think the 2 days of rest and recuperation could be important for Penn State with Abdul Carter. See if he's able to play. Notre Dame's got some injury issues. Jeremiah Love went out of that game. Howard Cross went out of the game. Notre Dame's already been banged up as hell on the defensive line. So we'll see about that. I think if Notre Dame gets to the game in pretty good order physically, I think they're the better team. Not by a lot, though. Not by a lot. This could come down to, can Drew Aller and Tyler Warren make some plays that wins the game? Can Riley Leonard scramble and make some plays? Can Notre Dame's defense rise up and make another huge turnover play? Notre Dame now leads the nation in takeaways defensively. That unit's been incredible for Al Golden. So I'm really excited for that one. I'm going to be at that one. They're both going to be great, but I'm very excited for the game.
Yeah, that one shapes up, honestly, kind of like the game, the Sugar Bowl, as far as the matchup and what kind of game it could be. Like a rock fight, like really low scoring, like a 16-13 type, 13-10 type of game. I haven't looked at the weather in Miami, but I know like this cold blast is coming through the country next week. And so it's probably not going to be as warm as normal, actually, in Miami. And you wonder even if it's going to be a little chilly down there in South Florida, Dan. I might have to bundle up and keep the flip-flops in the suitcase.
I feel for you, but the team from State College and the team from South Bend doesn't
I think they can handle it.
The early forecast.
What are we talking about here? You're early personal.
Yeah.
This is breakdown of the game. Breakdown of the game. I might have to pack a sweatshirt. Thank you.
I might not be able to wear flip-flops to the game.
That's right.
The early forecast Miami, 71 and sunny for next Thursday.
Oh, a little chill, Dan. Gotta be careful.
I'm sorry.
Low 70s.
Sunning
Dan.
Yourself by the pool. I think we're all better for that.
No, I agree.
Low scoring.
Very, very. I could see this one in being similar to the Sugar Bowl and how it plays out, where big special teams play. But I'm excited to see a few players in this one. One that Pat mentioned, I mean, Tyler Warren, you keep thinking that maybe you're going to be seeing him for the final time playing college, and he's just been freaking incredible. I'm excited to watch him play. And that's going to be, I'm guessing, a pretty big focal point, I would guess, in this preparation for Notre Dame, is trying to slow him down in whatever way they can. And I tell you what, they've done a great job. Notre Dame's defense, Al Golden, defensive coordinator, saw him running him after the game on the field. He was just awesome, he said, as he walked off with his family. But they've been able to shut down a lot of really good players this year, and they'll have another one in Tyler Warren to try to shut down now.
And stop those Penn State running backs. I agree, low scoring. It's going to be really, really, really good. All right, quickly, we have a people's court I got to get to. It involves competition. Involves a young lady named Audrey Van Lanningham. Aubrey Van Lanningham. She is from Cedar Park, Texas. It's just outside of Austin, so beware Buckeyes, because this might scare you. She's a cheerleader at the high school, but also the president of the Future Farmers of America. Futures Farmers of America, which we know a lot about here. We're not future farmers. We don't become farmers. She was very proud of her pet goat. She had a pet goat that she would take around the state, and it would win many awards. I don't really know how you win an award with a goat, but I assume it's like a dog competition. It's a good looking goat, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, we got people that judge meat. You can judge goats too, you know?
Well, this thing's living. Well, at least some of them are.
Yes, it is living.
That's where the plot twist gets.
Yes.
Anyway, prosecutors in Texas claim that Aubrey's desire to win, this is from the Daily Mail, by the way, Daily Mail's back. Aubrey's desire to win got too much for the teen, and she turned to evil ways to ensure victory by poisoning a fellow student's goat. There was a rival goat that apparently was as pretty as Aubrey's.
Well,
and she took her out, took the goat out.
Yep.
They're calling her Tanya Herding.
Oh,
terrible. She faces up to 2 years in prison if convicted of poisoning 6-month-old Willie the goat twice over a 3-day period, eventually killing. RIP Willie. Pour one out for Willie.
Yeah.
The brazen teenager showed no remorse when authorities launched the probe, allegedly telling the cops, "I don't like cheaters," when questioned. She first denied it, but then admitted. The mother of the daughter who owned the rival goat, Willie's owner's mother.
Yeah.
Whatever. This one woman said is not happy. She wants Aubrey prosecuted to the full extent of the law. Quote, she's saying it's because of cheating, but from what we deciphered, she was just really jealous. You can't even cheat when it comes to showing goats. It makes no sense. That's where the jealousy really kind of falls into place. Pat, what should happen here? We have a dead goat, goat competition. We have 17-year-olds knocking off goats like they're Tony Soprano. What the hell is happening out there?
I mean, that's some hardcore stuff now. I mean, go and poison the goat. Her problem, Aubrey's problem, is she can't be allegedly. Tanya. Yeah, yes. She can't be Tanya Herding because Tanya, who is not very smart, was still smart enough to get someone else to do the whacking.
That's true. That is true.
It was Jeff Galooly's plan, and it was Shane Stant swinging the pipe at
Nancy Kerrigan's knee.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tanya at least built in a little buffer there. Our girl Aubrey, no buffer. So I'm sorry, man. You know what? You kill the opposing goat and you get caught. And apparently there's even like video of it. Got to do your time. Just put
Tanya
her in the slammer.
Tanya Herding. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Ross, you got a punishment for Aubrey?
Well, I mean, shouldn't she have her goat killed too?
Oh, shoot.
Wow, eye for an eye. One goat dead, kill the other goat.
Yeah, that is some goat. South Louisiana justice. Her goat did wrong.
Just going to be a lot of goat stew. A lot of goat stew in Texas.
I don't think that's the punishment.
No? All right. Well.
Wow. Frontier justice.
You asked me. That was my initial reaction was, you're going to kill my goat. I get to kill your goat, you know? That is the old way, Dan. That's, as Pat said, the eye for an eye.
I think the other woman, they should give Willie's owner her goat. You get the goat. You lost the possession. Like, you steal my car.
But what if her goat doesn't want to perform? Like, I don't know what they have to do if they got to walk around, you know, or something.
Well, it's
how do you win
best,
a goat competition?
Yeah, second best goat.
Maybe that goat doesn't want to perform for the new owner.
Well, that's true. I don't know. I have no idea what happens in a goat competition. And quite honestly, I don't want to know. I'm not that interested.
Yeah, just go Old Testament on him and kill him. Yeah, kill it.
All right. This took a dark turn. Ross, go back to online shopping for sweaters for your tough trip to Miami Beach.
Hey, wait, let me. Pat's app is wrong. Here, let me read my weather forecast for Thursday of the game in Miami. This cold front, this cold blast is coming through across the country. There's going to be like single digits in the south and in South Florida. The high for Thursday, Dan, is 63. My app is telling me low of 47. So at kickoff, probably going to be in the mid-50s, bundle up.
Oh, boy.
So you're telling me there's three northern teams in the college football playoff, and it's going to be single digits down in the deep south next week?
It's supposed to be. That's
It's like someone's deal with the devil ended.
I know.
I was going to say, hell has frozen over.
Yeah, hell has frozen over. Mm-hmm. So now you got to sit around in Alabama and Georgia and watch you got to watch this and sit there and go, really? Penn State, Notre Dame? Really? Mm-hmm. I got to watch Penn State and Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, people. I don't have to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. At least you're doing better than Willie the Goat.
That's for sure. Yeah.
At least we got that. Willie. All right. That's got to be our show. We'll be back on Monday to talk about the playoff, and we appreciate everyone listening. Talk to you later.